In this week, on the 31st of March 2001, Kevin Cooper's injury time equaliser kept the Dons' slim playoff hopes alive as they twice came from behind to draw 2-2 with the First Division promotion chasing Bolton Wanderers. I'm happy with a point from a game that I thought had slipped away from us, manager Terry Burton said. It's now 12 games unbeaten and I just wish we'd started the season better. But we've still got 30 points to play for and 7 of our last 10 games at home. We will not be giving up. Not giving up. It's in our DNA. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. Traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to the show. I'm Matt Cooper, and today, as always, I'm joined by our regulars, Moore Frere and the CEO of Fair Game, Niall Cooper. Hi, Niall, how you doing?
All right, Matty. Nice to be back.
Yes, you've been away. We're going to come on to that. You've been away sorting out football in Manchester. In Manchester, not just sorting out football in Manchester, like the whole of football, but you're it, anyhow. Also with me today, it is our man with all the buttons, the producer, Dr. Adam Proctor. Hi, Adam. How you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Nice jumper.
I know. I got a new jumper for my wedding anniversary. It's one of the Wimbledon cricket style jumpers. It took my wife a day to realise it was actually a Wimbledon cricket top. She just thought, it's still like a nice jumper. And then today she went, hang on a minute, that's a Wimbledon one.
That's right. It's also a jumper I've had for a while now, Adam. So you're nicking my look. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that.
This makes great podcast.
Yes, yeah. Hey, well, it's a lovely jumper.
We'll link to it because it's a cool jumper. We'll link to it on the website. People should buy one.
We'll take some pictures. We'll send them around. And finally, the face of all the opponents' podcasts, the go-to man and our Welsh dragon, it is tall Mark Lewis. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good evening. I've been getting a lot worse than that. My son, who's at uni in Scotland, actually calls himself the Welsh dragon.
Okay. He's got confused.
Because he's
proudly
confused. Welsh. No. He's proudly Welsh. Whereas my daughter, who's proudly English, has been at university in Wales, is also getting confused and favouring Welsh things too.
But that is great, and I love the fact that you're on every opponent's podcast now.
No,
It's not enough to be on just to hear. You need to be on all the others as well. Wow.
On behalf of the club, as you know, if you read the programme occasionally, I source articles from away fans. And when I did one for Stockport, coming up in a few weeks' time, the bloke from the Stockport podcast said, do you want to come on our podcast? So I said, yeah, why not?
I tell you, I'm so excited that we have to play Stockport again. That's just... Oh,
good. I did actually say to him in advance of the game on Saturday, I'm not sure we're going to get any points off either of these games. And sadly, I may be right.
And looking at the weekend, it's really odd because all the comments afterwards and hearing JJ talk, it's like we were robbed 3-0, which is kind of weird to think about it. I mean, it just feels like we were a couple of defensive errors, which is in our locker. We're good at doing that. And then we're chasing the game. And obviously that's where they get their third goal from, is because we're trying to get back into it, which is great. I mean, it does seem like, I think we have developed a new style of football, which I never thought we'd see under JJ, which is kind of this gung-ho, let's just go for it attitude. But anyhow, I want to go into it, but here's the background to the weekend. So now we've got all these injuries. So Stevens, probably out for the rest of the season. Brown, probably not until after Easter. Hippolyte, a bit after that. We've recalled Foyo and Jennings, who are both in the squad on Saturday. Not recalled McCoy Splatt, best name in football. So it's going to be a difficult run in for the end of the season. And you know, you look at it and you think it's tricky to know where goals are going to come from. and where points are going to come from. And also, on top of that, we still don't know when Tilly's going to be back.
JJ confirms Stevens is out for the rest of the season. So Stevens is not coming back. JJ said that. So,
but he said nothing about Tilly, and the fact that he said nothing about him is, as far as I can see, not a good sign.
No. We do know that Sass has been, is now back in full-time training. And again, we haven't heard anything about our favourite mystery striker, Leighton Stewart. So we don't know about him either. Mark, you saw him on the pitch, didn't you, in a home game recently?
Allegedly, Leighton Stewart was warming up before the last home game against Peterborough. I say allegedly. I saw Sasso. I didn't see Stewart.
Yeah.
But Sasso was also warming up, and they took him to Stockport, which makes me think that he'll probably be on the bench, because JJ being JJ will then mean he'll be able to cover left wing, right wing, and wing back, and also forward at the same time.
Or with one player.
Or with one player, yeah. Who can't tackle.
No. You know, but hey, tackling's for defensive teams.
Here's a crazy stat to throw in to start with. Top 10 of XG, which is bollocks as far as I can see, but XG, according to social media, in top 10 list, Stockport against AFC Wimbledon, 1.77, but apparently they still managed to score 3 goals. It was second in the whole of League One and League Two games played. However, down in 10th place, out of all of the League One and League Two games played, were AFC Wimbledon against Stockport. 1.31, apparently, XG. But we scored no goals. So that just shows what complete bollocks XG is.
And it's so good, isn't it? Because we get so many points for XG. Yeah, XG is one of the things I just find in the modern day of football. It's one of those things I just cannot get my head around. I really can't. I don't understand the benefits of it. I don't understand even how has it worked out even? How does that work out that you work out that is they should
it's
have scored from that?
Something about chances, which presumably is about how many crosses you've put in or something.
I know, but it's not like two, is it? You don't get like two, or it's always 1.31. I mean, I've never seen a 0.31 of a goal. It's a thing. So,
very true.
You know, and as for the other thing, VAR, and I'm going to solve this, just going to solve it right now.
Get rid of it.
This is the solution, everybody, because I know there's actually 3 people listening. The solution to VAR is, if it's not done in a minute, it's not clear and obvious, you go with the referee's decision. That's the solution.
I think it needs to be quicker than that, to be honest. That's the thing, isn't it? So, like, I'm, you know, I love...
What are you going to do in a minute?
I'd like a big
countdown clock.
I would certainly say it needs a time limit, 30 seconds to a minute, something like that. And you go, if it's not cleared up by VAR in that time, it's not clear and obvious. Carry on with what the referee said. That's the thing.
You're thinking the referees now, default to the VAR.
Yeah. Because they're too scared to make a decision. Yeah, they're too scared.
It's like you need to be where it is. I think VAR. Where it has a use is whether the ball crossed the line, whether it's gone out for a throw, a corner or a goal. That's where VAR, because it's like they can do that really quickly. You know, and you can almost have it like as an automatic, like a little bleep going, that's a goal or not.
That's what goal line technology is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just have that.
Just extend that's fine. You don't need VAR at all.
Yeah. So you're going to get some goals which are offside. They're going to go in your favour. They're going to go against you.
Paolo Canio's goal that everyone raves on about, his wonderful volley against Sullivan in the season we went down, was offside. So what? It was a brilliant goal. Fair play. You know, it was offside.
I didn't even realise it was offside. Man, that is not a great goal. That is a cheat. I want
Check
that goal,
out.
Re-
Check
I want
it
that
out
goal
on
reversed,
YouTube, my friend. I'm going to find it now on YouTube.
And Beckham, I'm sure there was something wrong with Beckham's fluky goal as well. Yeah.
That wasn't offside.
Only because he was in his own half, but I'm sure it should have been. Anyhow, on to Stockport. I mean, as usual...
I'm going to break that, because Tony Yeboah, if we're talking about best goals against us, I think Tony Yeboah's goal for Leeds Oh, that was pretty amazing.
I really have no. I've got no interest in listening. I've got no interest in hearing about.
Why are we talking about best goals against us?
I don't know.
This is going to be cut. This section.
I don't know.
With the same Wombles, what we do, we just
no. I refuse to. I like hearing the best goals we scored against people, but I think there was a time like in match of the day, whenever they do like the best goals ever of all time, like in the top 10, there's like three or four that are against us. It really annoys me.
Yeah, one is Canio and one is Yeboah. Yeah, you're right.
And Beckham.
And Beckham.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah. But no one talks about Andy Clark's brilliant goal against Liverpool, you know, which was nominated.
Or Jason Yule's overhead kick against Southampton.
Yeah, exactly. Or John Fashanu's brilliant goal against Newcastle in the, the fifth round of the FA Cup. Yeah.
That was a pretty cool chip.
And he did a similar one against Swindon. So, you know.
Hey, I've got a feeling there should be a new DVD in the shop.
There should be.
And Swindon goals ever.
Yeah, and what's it called? Robbie Earle's goal against Liverpool as well. Brilliant chip from outside the area. Keeper off his line. Brilliant goal.
Jason Newell in his debut, overhead kick against Liverpool.
Yeah.
It was against Southampton. Nice try, Mark. I did just mention that. So yeah. It's all right. When you want to listen. Fine.
I was looking for Decanio's goal. Apologies.
Don't look for that. Don't look for Decanio's goal. I need to see if it was offside.
Yeah, exactly. I just said
that. I'd love that. That'd be the
can
best.
Add that.
That'd be the best moment ever. He scores that
I'm
goal.
I'm not adding a link to someone else's goal against us, for goodness sake.
Exactly. You can link to all the great goals that we scored. Anyhow, the point
Paul
is...
Paul Miller's goal at Villa Park, where we
didn't
won.
Paul Miller's goal against... His hat-trick penalty against Peter Shilton, with Peter Shilton
Darby. Peter
being shouted. You know, that's got to be a good goal. There's a question for the listener or three out there. What are Wimbledon's best ever 10 best ever goals?
10 Wimbledon's 10 best ever goals.
Sim Johnson, obviously, against Harley Whitney, but you know,
I think there's a Ronan Curtis goal in there.
I mean, that was best for the impact, but I'm talking about the actual quality and skill.
Well, I think that was a lot of quality and skill in a very high pressure situation.
Because Sim Johnson got that blinder from against Harley Whitney, but I think the week after, there's somebody else.
Didn't Danny Oakins? Yeah. I'm sure he scored a similar sort of goal. Anyhow, and bringing it back to the present day, Stockport. Now, right. Obviously,
that's
as
it.
I say,
done.
My Wombles,
excellent.
We weren't there. We weren't there.
Great chat, Matt. That's it. Right, Stockport, move on.
Goals against us. We don't talk about defeats.
You know what the most frustrating thing about Stockport for me is? It sounds like genuinely,
like it should be sauce that goes in the Lancashire hot pot. And that's it. End of conversation.
Says the man that went to Lancaster. So, you know, you went. We all went to universities up north, except for some Norfolk bloke.
Hello.
Hey, I didn't go up north. I went to Wales.
No, me.
he said we. He said all. He generalised me and the
bunch. Sorry, Adam. I didn't know you went to Wales. Okay. No, that was like lay off Stockport, basically. But no, normally when you lose, like, couple of goals or even 3-0. 3-0 certainly sounds like an unfair scoreline, but they put their chances away. But actually, you watch the highlights, and I know you guys don't watch ITV, but if you go back and watch the ITV highlights, we are the main game, which means we actually get more than about 30 seconds. So you can see properly that, yeah, exactly, we do. Matt Cooper.
Oh no, I don't want to watch that. I would have desire to watch this.
But the reason it's worth watching is because, you know, the Nkeng chance at 1-0 down is a really decent, genuine chance. But what it also shows is literally the keeper having made a decent save, then they hack it clear, literally just hack it clear, and on the break and the transition, that other modern word which is fucking awful, otherwise known as on the break, they tear us apart. And both, the same thing happened to Wickham, actually, unfortunately. Johnson, when people run at him quickly on a break, looks like he's got Pinocchio legs. It's completely made of wood.
Pinocchio legs. That's incredible. Do you know what, though? So you're talking about the transitions. I mean, that's a thing I think is a problem with when it breaks down in the transition. I wonder if it's because, Mark, it's like we're doing a high press against their low block.
I'm not sure anyone's doing low block in League One. They're not clever.
I wonder if the high press and the low block actually confirms the problem with our XGs is the main issue that we're facing here in transition.
Meanwhile, back in the weird world,
weird phrase they use for the withdrawn number 10 or whatever that. What's that?
Oh yeah, nine. The false nine. The false nine.
False nine.
Yeah, you can see the false nine because he has his.
We were playing with a false nine on Saturday because we had no one who actually was prepared to shoot. And the president of the MLB fan club would not actually be able to support his inability to put headers either on target or anywhere else apart from straight at the goalkeeper.
You can always tell a false nine. You can always tell a false nine now because they've got a fake moustache. That's the way that it works.
And Pinocchio and big light elf ears.
Yeah, that's right. And the funny glasses drawn on. False nine. That's the way it works. Anyhow, so Stockport wasn't great. But you've got to argue, haven't you? If you've got Hippolyte, Brown, Stevens, and Tilly, you would say the last few games we'd have got more points. We'd have certainly got three against Peterborough, I would argue.
Yeah.
And we might have got a draw against Stockport.
And yet, second half against Peterborough, when they'd all gone off injured, we played really well.
Yeah, we did.
And we created probably more in the game against Stockport. I know we didn't put them away, but we created more.
Yeah, I know. So what is it? Is it we just don't have a decent striker on the end of it? I mean,
yes.
It is that, isn't it?
Yeah,
so, exactly. And it does feel like such a shame with this guy, Leighton Stewart, because we've got him in, we've not seen him at all. And I don't know. I mean, it just feels unfortunate. I don't know what on earth he did to himself, but it's just really unfortunate that we've wasted that opportunity to get someone else.
It kind of feels like we're going to, I said a few weeks back, we wouldn't be able to rely on the same 15 players or so all the way through. And then, of course, four of them got injured. And it feels like the 15 we've got now, which is basically the starting lineup on Saturday and the subs on Saturday, which included Bauer and Hutchinson, turning speed of the Titanic between them. That's all we've got, basically. It's all we've got left in terms of fit players, possibly with Sassi to be added to that. So, not thinking Stewart will come back, unfortunately. Writing off both Stevens and Hippolyte and Brown, hopefully not the latter two, but if we have to rely, as I say, on the likes of Jennings coming back, and let's face it, Jennings and Foyo have been played regularly for Sutton, but we've catapulted them up two leagues within 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
They played midweek for Sutton, I think away at Gateshead off the top of my head, and now they've gone straight to playing Stockport, which quite apart from a lot of travelling, is obviously a much higher league and a much higher standard. And we go straight from Stockport into Lincoln, which isn't exactly going to be a cakewalk either.
No.
I'm going for a long pub lunch somewhere or something like that on Saturday, right?
I think Saturday's a good time to do it. I'm going to do it mine on Friday when the game's on.
nice one.
Good.
That's I'm going for a big Saturday pub lunch, obviously, to celebrate unexpected success.
It's going to be tough, and we still don't know if 50 points is enough to stay up. We hope so, but
games didn't really go against us so much, so it wasn't too bad, was it?
They drew, but that is 1 point closer. Yeah. But a lot of those teams have got to play each other.
Benefit. That's the one thing. So it's still quite tight, and I'm still a little bit nervous. And particularly with all those players out, that makes me particularly nervous because we have to. If we can get another win somewhere on the line.
Another 3 points somewhere ASAP would be good for sure.
I
wasn't so stressed about Saturday because it was like, okay, maybe it's not, all the results could have gone against us as well, but they didn't.
I think the aim still is 57, which is a point more. Was it 58? I think it's a point more than our highest.
Yeah, they're trying to get a point more than our highest, aren't they?
That would be great, but it's difficult with all those players injured. Anyhow, moving on from that, the I guess the big thing from last week is the vote went through, and this Wednesday is the confirmation vote. Again, we need to get, I think it's still the same number, over 70% of members need to no. What do we need to get? How many people need to vote? 2/3 of people need to vote, and we need to get a 50% of that, I think. And yeah, the important thing is vote. I have a feeling that a lot of people voted that first round where it came out. You could vote in round one and round two, and I think a lot of people did that. But you can, if you didn't, you can do that. And I have a sense. I'm talking blind here. Yeah. I have a sense that you can change your vote.
You can change your vote. Equally, I'd strongly suspect that they've already got the numbers.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean to say
if you can change your vote, surely they haven't got the numbers.
I think that there's a lot of people that abstained in the for the second one, so they didn't hear all the arguments that were made. So I think that's what's happened.
So they can change their vote.
No, anyone can change their vote second time out for the second one. So if you're going back in, you should be able to change your vote.
I'm just reading the web. I'm just reading the email because I haven't seen it. If you have
online voting ends. Well, we're recording this on
Monday.
Yep. So the online vote ends on Monday, the 6th of April at 7 PM.
Yes.
Next week.
And it says, if you have already voted, you do not do anything further for SGM2. Your vote has been recorded. If you have not yet voted, you will receive an email from the Don's Trust secretary with a unique voting link. Please don't wait. Cast your vote as soon as you receive the link. Changing your vote. If you have already submitted a proxy vote and wish to change it, you can do so by using your personal unique voting link and submitting a new proxy before the deadline on the 7 PM Monday, the 6th of April. Your most recent submission will be the one that counts.
So my question is, if you voted on the night and were one of the few, there weren't many, but one of the few that voted, my wife and my son were two of them, that voted on the night last Monday.
You were only voting for the first round then, I would.
You could only vote for the first round, exactly. So therefore you will, get a new unique voting link.
In theory, yes, that's what it says, yeah.
Yep.
My question would also then be, follow up to that, a lot of people were able to, and this was publicised by us and other people, vote in paper format. So my question to the DTB there would be, is that paper format going to exist for vote two as well? Because that would be handy, because then people can do it at the Luton game on Easter Monday.
I suspect they probably would, and that probably would be available.
Yeah. And as for the thresholds for success. And
any members of DTB listening to that, please comment on socials to let everyone know.
The turnout has to be 50% of the membership. So turnout has to be 50%. There needs to be an approval of 75% or more must vote in favour.
And turnout was 60.59 or something random like that?
Yeah. And so it'll probably be a similar sort of figure again, because like I say, most people would have got the link that was through and they'd voted all the way through in round one and round two. So my assumption would be that they probably got the numbers, but whether more people abstained in the second vote because they were unsure, I don't know, because we still need to get 75%. But mind you, the winning margin, I think, was over 90% for each of the three votes, wasn't it? So anyhow, if you haven't voted in the second round, vote.
We don't want the heat to go out of it, though. We definitely obviously want to make sure the numbers are maintained.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, last time, Resolution 1, which is a 50.1 membership majority ownership, 92.35% in favour with a 60.54% turnout. And then the other two were pretty much similar values, so we should be good.
Yeah, totally. We should be. We mentioned that last week, Adam. I don't think you were here. So, but you know, it's good. We reinforce it. We're just going to keep. We're reinforcing.
We have to reinforce it.
No, that's what we're doing. We're doing it. We're reinforcing it. It's all good. So the vote in the first round was all positive. apart from some people who vote against it. And then there were, and then I'm not pointing fingers, Niall, or naming names, Niall. So, you know, that's the thing. So it's going to be interesting. And I've got to ask Niall, in the second vote, right? Because you can vote for, against, and this time you can abstain and your vote gets counted. So in the last round, if you abstained, it counted like a no vote. In this round, you can abstain and it votes counts. What's your plan, Nye? And you don't have to tell us because it's a secret ballot.
He already has.
I never told you. I should have probably, I don't know, I'm leaning towards voting yes, but that does depend on whether that apple crumble appears.
So you are allowed to change your vote, but in your voice note last week,
he said
categorically that you would be voting yes.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I did say that, and I do think I need to caveat with the apple crumble element.
You wow. didn't caveat you it didn't, out
no,
the
there
time.
There was no caveat.
Honestly, where I'm at, to be really all honest, Paul, is that the first one was really important to get the numbers through, and I voted no because I wasn't of that. You know, I've consistently said that. It's my opinion. And I feel that as a principal, it would feel wrong for me to therefore switch that. Where we're at now is the numbers were so significant in that. And I think the club needs to look at how we take it forward. And that's why I'm leaning that way, which is the other way around. I wanted to make sure that the vote happened and then we got through. And that's really important.
Seems, I don't want to say the words jumping and bandwagon, but no, I don't want to.
You'll be correct. I still think
I would prefer the club to be 75%. I'd love the club to be 100% fan owned, right? That's really where I'd love it to be. You know, but I also look at it and I'm also aware that, you know, we'll come on to it now. Season ticket prices.
Yeah, issues. This is the club. This is an issue.
So it's like at the moment the club needs to raise money, and currently I am not, you know, those who know, I don't work for Amnesty. I haven't worked for Amnesty for a couple of years. I've been doing loads of stuff on a voluntary basis for Fair Game, doing all that sort of stuff, dedicating far too much time to it. I'm enjoying it, but it doesn't pay. I've been doing a little bit of consultancy work. So I'm really, you know, I'm not rich. I wasn't rich at Amnesty, but I've not got very much disposable income. So when the season ticket early buyer price comes in at from where we sit at £609, I can't afford £609. And that's really worrying. So, you know, actually seriously thinking for the first time in, I can't remember when I didn't have a season ticket. You know, we're talking back at the old Plough Lane, I think. And that would have been when I was a programme seller. We didn't need to have a season ticket because you got a free pass into the ground then. That's probably when I was, that's what, 35 years ago or something. So I had a season ticket for that long. And at £609, I'm struggling to pay that. So that's where I'm concerned. So that's where it kind of goes like, geez, we need to have some more, you know, the whole why do for the financial argument for Fair Game, kind of that for me was another example of hitting home. I was like in there, went in to log in, hadn't checked how much it was going to cost, went to renew my season ticket, and then I can't afford that.
It is.
That was a really worrying state of affairs where it's kind of like, you know, obviously following the club is like a big thing. It's a massive part of me. And I'm going like, what situation I'm in where somebody like me is having to think, how the hell can I afford it? That's a really worrying state of affairs. And I realise that's replicated across the whole of the football pyramid. There are loads of people, and I'm like, look, I'm middle class. I'm not going to deny it. If people like me are feeling they're priced out, then it's like, you know, what about other people who haven't had that wealth from before? How are they ever going to afford it? Are we just pricing out other people?
Well, I mean, this is what we said originally before we even knew exactly what the price of hikes would be. And I think in the original meeting, 6 weeks or so ago, James Woodruff talked about a 13% or so increase. But I suspect that's probably an average across the ground as opposed to specifically. We're talking about the Kappa standard that obviously all of us individually sit in. What I don't know of overall, and I haven't looked into the finer print, obviously, of the details with regards to season tickets, is whether or not, for example, if you were looking to move from the Kappa stand to the, I think it's the Rye stand, so basically the west stand to the east stand, the opposite side of the ground, which offers a decent view, as far as I can see. If you're looking to do that, then, and is as close to the food trucks, frankly, can you do that, first of all? Because obviously it would be significantly cheaper. From what I can see, let me just dig up the details there.
Yeah,
I
I
mean,
mean,
we're talking
I think
about.
this is the problem. This is the issue that, particularly in our the area we've been sitting in for all this time. And Niall, you were saying earlier on it was undervalued, but that particular bit that we're in seems to have gone up by over 20%, well over 20%. I mean, I'd be going from, because like everyone, I would be paying by direct debit, and it would go up by just under
It's 15 quid,
£15 a
was it?
month. So it's
57
like,
to 72
yeah,
per
so it
year.
goes up by about 15 quid, which is, you know, that in this day and age, I know for a lot of people it might not seem like, but that is, and it's just a month, but it is a whack when you've got to take other things in consideration.
Oh,
So it just
agreed.
feels like it goes up. And
Especially as they've just put these prices in place, and they would have probably talked about them in
yeah.
January and February time. And then obviously everything going on in the world now with regards to higher
Yeah.
fuel prices and higher food prices and so on and so forth, which no individual business can impact, obviously, but it's everybody's the pound of their pocket, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, well, it's what it's over. That's over 150 quid, isn't it? That's 175, 180, 190
180 quid.
quid. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's like it's a load of money that's gone up by. It really is. That is really a huge whack for us. So then you're right. I mean, like, do you? I mean, and I love where we sit. I like its accessibility. I like the fact you can, you know, like it's a great corner of the ground.
So we're for our listener, we're in the southwest corner, and certainly I remember when prices were first coming up on the times when I was on the board, there was very quickly realised that that part of the ground was underpriced because it's actually quite a good spot in terms of views, locate, you know, how you get to everything like that. And the consequences, obviously, you didn't say, you know, that they've looked at it and thought, well, actually, we can charge more for that area. You know, if we were to all leave, they would not have problems selling our seats.
And that is the point. That is the
And
fundamental
that,
point.
yeah,
It's
that's a
simple
point.
supply and demand,
But
unfortunately.
yeah, I know, I don't, and
I
I'm all
don't. I
for.
don't think it's right at all.
No,
Sorry.
I mean, I think I get economics. I know how that works. It's the supply and demand thing. I completely get how that works, and I understand that we need as much money in, but I really worry about alienating those football fans that have been going on for forever. I mean, you know, obviously it's not just us, it's football fans across the country. What they're doing in at Manchester United is just horrendous. People have been in the
Spurs
same
is a really
stands
bad
for
example as
years and
well.
years and years and now being kicked out because they want to give it to, you know, people who are going to afford more and more.
The other one was they've just done it at West Ham, where they've just basically told loads of season ticket holders you're moving without any kind of issue. You know, so it's like, you know, that's what's happening because they football clubs are looking at a ground and they're seeing all these seats and they're not seeing individuals. They're seeing individual seats being worth something. And that's where they're kind of going. It's been, I'm moaning because I'm struggling to afford it. But the leap in prices at other clubs is even more significant than what we're talking about here. And you're in a situation where it's not about Niall's seat. It's about seat L30, row 32, whatever, seat 32, row L. That's what it is. And that's that seat. And that seat is worth a certain amount. And actually, the best scenario for the club would be if they could sell that seat every week individually and then have a new season, new person coming in each week that then goes and spend 150 quid in the club shop as well. That
Especially,
is
yeah. Sorry.
the idealistic best value use of that seat. Me being a season ticket holder who's been there for a few years, who's used to paying under the value for that seat, who only maybe spends a bit in the club shop, but not as much as somebody who comes in every week. I am not as valuable as that other alternative. We're not as bad in thinking like that, but that is definitely the mentality higher up the pyramid every single week.
I was going to say, I don't think it's about whether you can afford your seat or not. Actually, what it comes down to is making watching football affordable. And, we have slightly nicer seats than potentially other parts of the ground. I mean, I think they're all really good seats generally. Why is it not affordable? And the way to think about affordability is to think about what do people generally earn? What's the average wage in that, around that, those various places? and make it actually affordable. It's an expensive, it's a seriously expensive day out already, and it's going to get even more expensive.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just about what you earn now, is it? You've got to put in the cost of living, because like what we're earning now hasn't kept up.
Of course,
you know, well, and for a lot of people, it's even less. So I'm hoping, Mark, you might know this off the top of your head, but certainly in our home end, I'm hoping that those prices, if they've gone up, they've gone up by a very small amount. Is my big hope, because those are going to be the people that are going to
people behind the goal.
The people behind the goal. That's where those are the people there that are going to have the less disposable income. I know that. That's because they are our most fanatical fans, and we've got to keep them on board. You know, we've got nice seats, and maybe the truth is that we will, and it will feel uncomfortable to do this. Maybe the truth is for a few of us, we'll move to the other stand.
That's if they've got that block of 8 or 9 seats that we currently have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's whether everyone moves anyhow. But
the other thing I've got to say on this is that Fair Game has actually done some research on this, particularly about ticket pricing. And for a club to be long-term sustainable, this is when you have the long-term view, which clubs don't have, right? No club has this. It doesn't benefit a club to raise ticket prices, because what you end up doing is you start pricing out the loyal fan and you bring in the temporary fan. And the temporary fan is the one who's most fickle. So if a club gets relegated or has bad times, they lose, or it's a cold Wednesday night, they lose those fans because they're fickle. Right. Yeah. Whereas you have the long-term fan is the one that will be there in the times of crisis or trouble. They're the ones who will bail out, make the club long-term sustainable. That's the long-term view. No football club looks at the long-term view, just the problem. But like the academic and economic argument, long-term economic argument, is you look after the long-term fans because they're the ones who are going to keep you afloat. And you try and deepen that involvement and that engagement by having that affordable ticket pricing. But nowadays, football, particularly the top end, is just seen as an entertainment business where you just fleece your fan for as much as you want. I mean, in a way, we're lucky we're not in the Premier League, because that would be appalling. We would be fleeced not to be
afforded. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to afford it at all. I mean, and the other thing...
Sorry to jump in, Matt. No one's actually mentioned, unfortunately, that as a fan-owned club, this is one of our main sources of income.
Well, yes. And this is the other quandary that we face. The quandary we face is knowing that we're a fan-owned club, and despite what the Times article said about us no longer being a fan-owned club, and that being circulated around, which really
dodgy, lazy journalism.
Is really, really lazy journalism, because I think you find if over 50% of your fans, 50% of people own the club, you're the majority owner. So we're still a fan-owned club, whatever your flipping name is, from the Times. So get your facts right, for goodness sake. We're very proud to be that way.
Journalists getting their facts right? Surely not.
I know.
We had a former sports journalist on our podcast.
I know. But it's annoying. But the other thing to say is, before we just... we're going to move on from the season tickets, but...
not all journalists are lazy people. So literally, at the Fair Game conference, which I could talk about...
I just want to say this one thing is that... If you can afford it, I don't know if you can. The early bird offer ends on Thursday, the 2nd of April. So for us, for instance, the price will go up from £609 to £644. But from the 3rd of April onwards, you can then do it as a payment plan. So that's what's going on. So if you can renew your ticket and you can afford it, you're going to get it cheaper if you do the early bird discount. If you can't, you wait until the 3rd, and then you can spread your costs over.
The difference, just to answer your question, Matt, between the south stand behind the goal and the Kappa stand is £80 on the season ticket. £80 cheaper to be behind the goal.
£80 cheaper. But I just wondered how much it had gone up from last year to this year.
Yeah, but, I don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know those figures, but I'm hoping that it's not gone up substantially. That's the big hope. Anyhow, so yeah. No, it's interesting you mentioned the Fair Game conference is obviously where you were last week. Good journalists there, good people. How was it overall?
So the good journalist there was David Conn, who's an absolute... I mean, there were some other ones. Matt Slater was there as well from The Athletic. Two great journalists. David Conn...
I thought you were going to get Matt Slater to come on the pod.
So I can get Matt Slater to come on this pod. Probably can do that.
That was your one task at the conference.
No,
sorry, carry on, Niall.
Right, so if that's easy, I can just drop him. Anyway, however, David Conn was brilliant. He did a session on the Hillsborough, the legacy of Hillsborough. Because obviously he did a load of campaigning about the lack of justice for the people who died in a tragedy. And we had one of the mothers of the one who led the campaign was on the stage, along with Clive Tilsley, who was a commentator, not on that game. He was commentating the other semi-final and then was called into Radio City, a radio station in Liverpool the day after, and talked about all the kind of harrowing stories they were hearing. It was one of the emotional things for the whole audience that were there. And there was like 200 or 250 people there. And one thing I started the session saying is that I remember it really vividly, Hillsborough. And I remember that it was Wimbledon were playing Tottenham at Plough Lane. I think me and Matt might have been programme sellers at the time, walking around the edge of the pitch. And at half time, the news came through that people were dying at Hillsborough. And at the time, we all thought the Liverpool fans had the reputation caused from a high soul and all the rest of it. And it was football hooliganism. And I remember the whole crowd, Wimbledon and Spurs fans, all started singing "We Hate Scousers." And the guilt, I feel, lives with me for a very long time. Because on the way home, we were hearing, you know, clippets of radio from other people. And as we made our way back, of hearing the unfolding tragedy and disaster that had happened and the numbers that were coming up. And I said that at the conference. And it was like, you know, and Clive Tilsley had a similar scenario when he was commentating in Goodison Park. And not Goodison Park, it was wherever the other semi-final was. And it was just like an absolute, you know, such an emotional roller coaster hearing for these people that she'd spent 27 years fighting for justice to get the first bit. She still hasn't got full justice. And you're just listening to it and going, like, these people are just like, it was such a powerful bit. And for me, that is why campaigning for football to be a force for good, campaigning for justice is so important. And when you hear, it's Margaret Aspinall, the mother whose son, I think it's James, died. And she talks about seeing her husband come back because the police didn't tell them. He had to go to he had to drive to hospital and see the body. And that was this. And then he came back at 6 o'clock in the morning the following day. Police still hadn't told her. And she saw him pulling up. And when he got out of the car, and she could see that her son wasn't in the car, because before mobile phones and all the rest of it. And he comes out and he's coming towards her, and she just runs away from him. And she's just going, if he doesn't catch me, then he hasn't died, because he can't tell me. And she's just running up, and the husband's just on the floor in tears, collapsed on the floor on that. That for me was like, that's why Fair Game Conference exists. That kind of stuff of bringing all those people together who actually give a toss about what football should do and the justice and the campaigning for it. That was such a moment. And it's a bit like, I know we don't normally do morbid stuff on the podcast like that, but that for me was just like an unbelievable story. And it just, that will live with me.
Yeah, no, but it's really important because, you know, I think the reason that because the news that was coming around from Hillsborough on that day was so misrepresented. It was horrendous because there was stories coming out there which was so wrong. And that's about tarnishing fans with a particular brush. And you know, football fans are still tarnished with a brush. But at that time, it was. All football fans are.
I'm going to say one other thing about this, and this is going to be a tiny bit political. They only got justice because of the Human Rights Act.
The Human Rights Act the footballing, travelling Farage is going on about now, isn't he? That's I think the, Farage that's Farage is Farage has gone to
Ipswich
and Croydon now. Yeah, because he's. But he's not meeting with supporters, is he? He's meeting with club owners. And I understand that Farage is against the, what's it called? He's against the regulator as well. So anyone who's a Farage...
He would have loved the conference because maybe we were all very pro. We had the regulator on the stage and we were kind of saying that there's loads of things they need to improve, but like, frankly, they're there.
Yeah.
But the Hillsborough thing, that mother, she would have not got justice, and she's got quite a significant amount if it wasn't for the Human Rights Act, because it was a state cover-up.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You know, certain people are on your side and certain people are not on your side. It's not complicated maths. Anyhow, but overall, apart from that as well, because that sounds amazing, and I think it's really important that these stories and this search for justice continues. But what was the other things that were carried on over the conference? Was there anything else?
So we had,
I'm thinking that could impact Wimbledon.
And the big thing was financial distribution. So we had a big conversation about that, and a campaign looking at where we're going and what the elements are at it. And so Fair Game has come up with this, the four-pot model that I've talked about on this pod before. And you'll see it on, if you look on Fair Game's socials, you'll see a number of videos that are coming out really explaining it quite simply. And that's really important about how we look at making sure clubs that do things the right way get rewarded, because otherwise you're not going to change culture. So that was a really significant part of it. And there were a lot of very senior people in football that were in those conversations, and there was a lot of buy-in. A hell of a lot of buy-in. I didn't hear any dissenting voices about that as a proposal. And so we've got to try and take that and push that forward to try and make it happen. So that's quite significant. The other things, there were stuff about the Union of European Clubs have got a new financial model being proposed that might go to, if that gets approved by UEFA, then we would potentially get money through from any Wimbledon player that ever plays any European game at any point ever. So if any of our, mate gets sold on and turn out for one game or two games, then we would get cash out of it. So there's exciting stuff potentially there. Low stuff about heritage.
And now, can I ask a question? I want to ask, because I just saw something online today. Is there a real discrepancy between UEFA and FIFA? I mean, it just feels like they seem to be going and pulling in slightly different directions.
A little bit. And look, I'm no fan of either, really.
But what I saw today was that apparently they're going to keep the prices down for the Euros in 28.
Yeah, so UEFA are reforming, and therefore becoming a bit better than where they were. FIFA, you just read between the lines, really. I mean, like, I'll not say too much because they're quite litigious.
Yeah.
Take that and read between them. I mean, like, we had a big panel on sports washing, and it was like, are the World Cup finals sports washing sham, was one of the questions we asked. And we had Philip Auclair, great Guardian journalist, Nick McKeon from Fair Square, some really good people on there. Clive Tilsley was in the chair, and it was, the answer really was yes. Yes, they are. There's just such a, and then just the World Cup, the American way of running sports is through dynamic pricing. And it is through, they pay an awful lot to go to matches. So some of the prices that they're talking about are, that's just how they treat fans in America. And we've mentioned on this podcast before, the NFL is an entertainment business. It's not a fan business. It's an entertainment business. College American football, is, that's the best comparison between English football and the American sports, because they actually are fan-based.
Yep.
Whereas the NFL is just an entertainment business, and they are viewing the World Cup as just an entertainment business, not something where your fans of a particular country go. It's not. It's like a show.
I think they're going to be in for a big surprise. I mean, we're recording this before the final games for getting into the qualifier, and I am putting all of my hope behind Denmark, because I would love to see Denmark at the World Cup in America. That would just be.
You just think that Denmark as a nation have got somewhat of a bit of an issue with America.
I would so love. I so want them there. I don't know who they're playing, but I want
Greenland.
Them to. Yeah, I want them to stop. I mean, I'm just excited. Let us draw
along with Iran.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, I don't think they're going to be. Oh, it's just really what a world. Anyhow, let us try and draw this
thing. A bit of politics at the end of the pod.
Yeah. Try and end on a positive. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying to end on a positive. I was going to talk about the women's team, but they're still in the bottom two, and looking at the fixtures, it's looking difficult. Because I think we've got Hashtag and Exeter. We've only got two games. And other sides are playing Billericay. So it's going to be...
Going to go to the wire.
It's going to go to the wire. And we need to get at least a victory out of one of those two games. So, it's all difficult. But anyhow, this is where we are. Coming up, we've got... away game against the team top of the table, and then it's Luton at home. Just a few more points would be amazing. Hopefully we get some players back. We keep on reporting. Dear listener, thank you very much for tuning in. My name's Matt Cooper. I'm grateful to be joined by mon frère Niall Cooper, Dr. Adam Proctor, and tall Mark Lewis. We'll see you next time with the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win or we